One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Tony Hawk, a skateboarding phenomenon who has been the face of the sport for over 30 years. His impact has transcended the once fringe culture of skating, helping to create theme park rides, the skateboard emoji, and of course, the iconic video game series. How has his passion for skating persisted after decades of success and a near career-ending injury in his 50s? And by the end of this video, we will make him address this animated masterpiece. I'm Anthony Padilla, and I spent a day with Tony Hawk. Hello, Tony.
Hey. Hello, hello.
Hello. Has anyone ever told you you look like Tony Hawk?
Yes, but you're the first today.
The first today. That's good. Because there was a period of time where you were posting weekly about someone coming up to you.
I did it in real time.
Oh, so you were posting it as
it would happen. Yeah. And then at some point, the interactions, I mean, it happens. It still happens all the time. But the interactions aren't necessarily worthy of sharing. And also, I started getting accused of making it up, which I guarantee none of it was made up. Follow me around for a day, you'll see that it happens, but.
Why do you think it is that people are telling you you look like Tony Hawk and they're not just like, oh, you're Tony Hawk,
Because people have me stuck in this sort of early 2000s era of
like Tony
video
Hawk
games.
Pro Skater era.
Yeah, absolutely. And and when you're identified as this age, kind of forever, that's how it goes. And so they see my face and they're like, that's him, but it can't be old.
Always young.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think that's pretty much it. Or people, they're like, oh, he looks like an older Tony Hawk. I'm like, that's what I am.
I am older Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
You didn't seek to be the face of skateboarding, but you are.
I didn't seek to be the face of anything.
It's wild, you know, to become something that you didn't necessarily choose to become. It just kind of fell into place.
When I started skating, you didn't aspire to be rich or famous because no one had. That didn't exist. That dream wasn't even in the realm of possibility.
When did you start?
In 78.
And skateboarding was kind of like a fringe underground.
It was like a fad. It was a yo-yo or a frisbee, and it was just kind of like people, they bought one, they did it, and then they moved on.
Right, no one like dedicated their time to becoming a pro at this time.
Yeah, and even the top pros, they were making a little bit of money, but it wasn't something that was long-term. And once they got to an adult age, they had to find a job. I mean, that was kind of the narrative. It was like, right. Well, now you're 18, you got to get a real job.
Right, grow.
So when you say like the face, it's just like, well, that, what does that mean back in the day? You're the face of the small community that people don't really think is valid. But I wasn't at all. I was just a kid growing up. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point it became more that our video game had sort of tipped the scales in terms of setting a foundation for skateboarding's popularity, helping to anyway.
Yeah.
As well as the X Games and Back to the Future and all kinds of other elements. Suddenly my name was sort of synonymous just with skateboarding. And I think at some point I realized that, oh, I have a responsibility to that.
When did you feel that sense of responsibility? Because you nailed the 900 at the X Games. I know that Tony Hawk Pro Skater was already in development. You nailed the 900. You said it was the best day of your life.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. The best day of my career.
Okay.
I should have clarified that early on.
your entire life.
I mean, but then again, I hadn't strived for anything in my life for over 10 years. In that moment, it felt like, I can't believe I actually got this thing done.
And then Tony Hawk's Pro Skater came out just a few months later.
Yeah, I think it was more after the game had been established. Because even when the game came out, there was no guarantee of success. We were making a video game about a fringe activity. The expectation was that people who skate will like it, but not that many people skate.
It didn't even occur to you that it could become something that people who never thought about skating could pick up? Because that's how I feel like that was my first introduction to skating, like my first real introduction to skating. And I was like, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I had seen skating, but only, right. You know, only like X Games type stuff that felt like it was so out of reach. But then Tony Hawk's Pro Skater introduced the idea that anyone could do it on the street at any time. And it became this like casual lifestyle thing in my head rather than like this sport that only certain prestigious people did.
Well, that's what we hoped, that it would just be fun, even if you didn't skate, it'd be fun that you could emulate these difficult skate tricks and not get hurt doing it, and not, you know, or if you're a skater, you could live out your fantasies of grinding phone lines and things like that. So I was really proud of it, but like I said, I didn't have that much expectation. I think it was once the first game was released and immediately they committed to doing a second one.
Yeah.
That's when I knew there was something more than I ever expected. And probably around that time, maybe the second or third release, is when I realized that people are looking to me not just to represent myself and the video game, but actually skateboarding to a broader audience. You know, that was a lot, but I was willing to do so, you know, and I always wanted to represent skateboarding with integrity and with authenticity. I mean, I think that was to me the most important thing of the game, that is authentic to skateboarding, skateboarding tricks, the skaters themselves, the look, the aesthetics, the music, the locations, all of those things are based in real life skateboarding.
Yeah, and it introduced so many people, so many young people especially, to this new thing that they had never even heard of. There were tricks that were put in the game, for example, that were never even possible, never thought to be any, like have any basis in reality for things that skaters can actually accomplish.
There is a generation of people who started skating because they played the game. And the tricks that they were doing in the game was the baseline for what they wanted to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas all of those tricks hadn't been developed until a lot of us were adults and had already been skating for decades. But that's their baseline. So that's where their starting point. And now when you're looking at, I mean, I'm going to Paris in a week for the Olympics.
Yeah.
And now when you watch what is going on in those events, it's video game tricks. It's like, crazy. It's stuff that we never imagined was possible, because they're like, oh, you can nollie flip into this trick and then 360 flip out and throw an extra 180
and
on
everything
it.
Is combined with a manual in between. That's what I like.
Yeah, or a grind.
Or a grind. Always a grind.
Mostly a grind in real life.
Yes. Really, you can't manual
you
around
can
for,
manual,
like,
but,
for five
but
minutes straight in real life?
If you were to link a combo with a manual in a skate competition, it's not going to count for much. You get higher scores on THPS.
That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Calling it right now. We're changing the rules.
I'll have you talk to the judges.
I will talk to the judges. But it's interesting seeing something like the Olympics almost feel like it's Tony Hawk Pro Skater in real life. The game pushed the limits so far, and you're now seeing those limits pushed in the Olympics.
I wouldn't credit the game entirely. I think that it's it was the skaters themselves that moved everything forward, because more people got involved, so there's much more variety, many more styles, different motivations, and different techniques being learned and created, and it was just sort of this collective evolution. But skating's always done that. It was just on a smaller scale. I did it 925 years ago. Now, kids that learn to skate ramps, that's one of the things that is their goal immediately. That's something that took me 10 years of my life to figure out.
And now these kids are doing it before the age of 10.
Yeah, and multiple times. And, I mean, we have, you know, beyond that, we've got kids that have done 1080s. And Michi Gruska's done a 1260. That's an example of the evolution of what we're doing.
Yeah, and the evolution, too, I feel like, is seen even when you first got started. It was mostly the vert-type skateboarding with...
It was mostly pools.
It was pools. Okay, yeah. So it was a lot of the back and forth style that you would see in an X Games type environment. And then it's expanded beyond that to, I feel like street is even more popular at this point.
Sure, because it's the skate park is much more accessible. It's out in your front door.
Yeah.
You know, that's the curbs and the ledges and the stairs. It's all right there to go practice. So, yeah, you're right. And it's low cost of entry. I mean, it used to be that when I first started skating, there was no traditional street skating. I know people think that sounds crazy, but really you were just doing it for transportation. My skateboard was my way to get to school.
Right. It wasn't like to do tricks and
At most you could rock up a curb, not ollie. Ollies weren't figured out on flat until much later.
I feel like ollie is the most basic move.
Sure.
Like that is the first. If someone said what's a skateboarding move to me and I had to pick one super quick, it would be ollie.
Yeah, almost everything starts with an ollie.
And that wasn't initially part of
not when I started.
Culture. That seems like one of the basics now, and it's interesting that had to be discovered.
Right, but when I started. You either did freestyle, which freestyle at the time was like dancing, pirouettes, handstands, 360s, and that wasn't cool. What was cool was skating pools. And the Dogtown and Z-Boys era of the late 70s is really what sparked that movement. And that's what drew me in because I saw pictures of people in magazines flying out of empty swimming pools. And I was like, that looks cool. And so all the skate parks that they made at the time in the 70s and early 80s were all designed after swimming pools. So if you look back at in history of skateboarding, any photo from say 78 to almost 84 is in a pool or a backyard half pipe to emulate pool walls. That was my entry point.
Was it just that looks cool, I wanna try
that? Well, I saw it in magazines, it kinda didn't look real.
Yeah.
And then I went to the skate park for the first time after I had been skating, like I said, as transportation. And I literally saw people flying and I was like, that's it, I wanna do that, whatever it takes to get there. And I was super scrawny and I probably a little too brave for my own good, but I made it my mission to do that and, you know, eventually knocked out my front teeth and
I feel like that's
my
an
first
entry.
Concussion.
Yeah, yeah. That's how you know you're a skater.
Yeah, it was. I think it was more a wake up call to my parents.
Right.
Where it was like, oh, wait, he's serious about this and it can be dangerous.
And you're going to keep going even if you get hurt.
I remember waking up in a different part of the skate park, my first really bad fall, missing my front teeth. And my first thought was not like, oh my God, what have I done? My first thought was, man, I got to learn how to do rock and rolls better. That's what I fell on.
What do you think it was about skating that made you so attracted to doing it?
I think it provided me with a sense of accomplishment and confidence that I couldn't find anywhere else in my life. The idea that you can continue to get better at it, no matter what level you're at, that really drew me in because everything else that I was doing at the time, playing baseball, playing basketball, it felt like I was never improving at any sort of measurable level. Mm. I was just a part of the team. And if the team sucked, then I sucked. Mm. And if the team was playing good and I sucked, I could have blown it for everyone. I just didn't like that dynamic. I'm not trying to knock team sports. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And when I started skating, it was like, oh, I can do this in my own pace, in my own style, and still be part of a community. And it was just so much fun. I think that was it. It was just like every time I go skate, I learned some new technique. Even if it was super small. And I remember my dad saying, he picked me up at the skate park one day and I had been skating probably the better part of a year by then. And he said, how was it there? And I go, it was good. That was my best day ever at the skate park. Because, you know, I hear you say that a lot. And I was like, well, it was better than the last time. So and I think that's when he realized, oh, this is what he loves. Oh. I love the community of it too, because everyone was so different and just they were unique. They had a different approach to life. You know, there was a lot of punk rock sort of intertwined with all that.
It was counterculture
as well.
At the time.
It was counterculture, but it was also just DIY. It was like, we're doing this. We don't really care what you think of it because we enjoy it.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily about it being cool. Was it cool in the beginning?
Let's put it this way. When I was in high school, I was already on my way to having some success in skating. Like I had a sponsor, I was about to turn pro. I would hide my skateboard in the bushes before school started.
Holy shit.
Because if I carried it through campus, I got hassled.
That's wild, because by the time I was in high school, it was the coolest thing, and everyone wanted to show their skateboard.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
It's crazy how what's what's cool can so quickly change.
We got bullied so you could run.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Or so I can look at the kids with skateboards and be like, damn, I'll never be as cool as them.
We got bullied so you could hold your head up high while holding a skateboard, I guess. No, it really was. It was just a different attitude towards skating back then. Because like I said, it was more that, oh, this is a kid's thing.
Yeah.
And if I went through high school, I was 15. I was 14 when I turned pro. And walking through campus or even standing outside of campus with my skateboard, it was like, you still do that?
Do you still get that to this day?
Well, I mean, now?
Or do you feel like because you're Tony Hawk, it doesn't matter?
Both.
Like, do people, are they ever like?
I get funny looks, especially on planes. I travel a lot. I get funny looks on planes because I don't expect to get recognized. And if people see this older guy with a skateboard, they just assume it's my kids.
That happens
a lot. They're just like, oh, is that your son's? I'm like, no. And like, what? Or I'll just skate, you know, and in full disclosure, I'll just skate through airports.
That's so fucking
and
cool.
There are times
when I was in the airport and I saw Tony Hawk skateboarding around me, I'd be like, this is a dream. What is going on?
There are times when I get a pass because of that.
They're like, sure, yeah, skate. Yeah, you're Tony Hawk.
Sometimes, yeah. And then sometimes no, though.
Sometimes you're detained and...
Yeah, I haven't been detained, but I've definitely been told to walk it.
So you travel with your skateboard. Like, that's like a target on your back to say, I am Tony Hawk.
I've learned to embrace it. I not mind it, I guess. Like, I'm so thankful that anyone even knows who I am or cares who I am. And I never aspired to be... to have some fame.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get good at skateboarding. Mm-hmm. So when I got fame, it was very uncomfortable. And I came off as standoffish only because I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I was like, why do you want to talk to me? And then at some point, I just kind of learned to get over that and understand that this is really special that we have these interactions.
Yeah.
And it can mean a lot to them. And also based on my experience with pro skaters in my day, I had the spectrum of experiences with people that I looked up to, where it was like, oh, that guy was really cool and really helpful. Or that skater was a total dick. And the ones that were negative were hugely impactful. And so I wouldn't want anyone to have that kind of experience with me.
So do you feel a sense of responsibility to be a person that...
Well, it's not a front. I mean, it's innate. I definitely am. I'm super excited to meet people, without question. You know, it's not some burden like, oh, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gotta put on the happy face. Not at all. Like, it's just, I live in a very unique space, and I love it.
I'm asking because I feel overwhelmed. And when I know a lot of people recognize me, I'm like, oh, okay, I just want to exist in quiet. And sometimes it's overwhelming, you know, so I'm wondering how you
navigate. Yeah, I think sometimes you just gotta step outside of yourself and think of, well, what does this mean for their interaction? What does this mean for them? Mm-hmm. To have this moment. At some point, you can learn to really enjoy it. You can't lose yourself in it.
Right.
I think that's when things get tricky.
Lose yourself like...
That's it. And that's the adulation is what you're striving for. And then it's just like you're addicted to fame.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable Pocket Hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
How much do you think you're paying in subscriptions every month? The answer is probably more than you think. Over 74% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about. I definitely did. Like, Netflix was charging me every month, and I haven't seen a single thing on there that I wanted to watch since 2023. Thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all of my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with just a few taps. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things that you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Padilla. That's rocketmoney.com/Padilla. rocketmoney.com/Padilla. You know that instant confidence boost you get when you're wearing an outfit that makes you look really good? That's what I get with Stitch Fix. Easily upgrade your wardrobe this year with a professional stylist that helps you find new, on-trend favorites that will work for you. I just give my stylist my size, style, and budget preferences. I order the boxes when I want and how I want. No subscription required. And they send 5 just for me pieces, plus outfit recommendations and pro styling advice. I keep what works and send back the rest. My stylist always sends just right pieces, and the fit is on point. It's like they have style ESP. I don't know how they do it, but they just get me. Stitch Fix makes it all so easy. I don't like to shop, and they save me the time and effort. Plus, I get outfits that make me look and feel really good. And if you don't love something, just send it back. Shipping, returns, and exchanges are always free. Style that makes you feel as good as you look. Get started today at stitchfix.com/Padilla and get $20 off your first fix. That's stitchfix.com/Padilla for $20 off. stitchfix.com/Padilla. Must redeem within 7 days of sign up.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
What I think stands out about you in skating culture is it does feel like there is this sense of, it feels like you're wholesome. In the documentary about the game, Jamie Thomas, who was featured as a pro skater in the game, said that they didn't even know if they wanted to do the game attached to someone so wholesome. Like, there felt like a, I don't know, like a disconnect or something.
I get it. I think it's just more that, especially in the 80s, I was part of the Bones Brigade, and we were considered kind of the nerdy skaters because we weren't getting into trouble. We weren't celebrating, partying, you know, but we were all just so focused on the skating itself. It wasn't like some choice where I have to be clean cut. It was more like all I care about is skating,
right?
And anything else is a distraction, and I don't want to do that stuff because it's going to affect my skating.
Yeah.
So it was more just this obsession for me. And that translated later on to like, oh, he's clean cut, and you know, he's not out there getting in trouble, and he's not partying. And it's like, well, at that point, I was a parent too, so I was a role model to my own kid. That was more important to me, you know. And if that transcended just parenting to a larger audience, well, so be it. But and yeah, I want to represent skateboarding well, but yeah. I also do celebrate that. Look, it takes all kinds. I can't judge anyone's journey, but if you skate and you rip, I respect it. You know, I wasn't trying to be more marketable. I wasn't trying to present a front. Mm-hmm. It was just more like, this is who I am, and this is why I do it. And yeah, I'm a dad.
I feel like that's something that you've innately just naturally done, is that you've held your integrity and you've remained humble despite, you know, being the face of skateboarding, you know, going back to what I was saying in the beginning. But like, you didn't choose this. You didn't seek the fame. It was almost like the fame was a byproduct of you just enjoying the arts of your hobby.
It would be hard to be fully yourself coming from a sport that was so largely dismissed.
Right.
And I went through cycles of success. So I know what it's like to struggle. Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like to have what I thought was everything and then kind of lose it. And when you go through those ups and downs, you just learn to be more reality-based.
Do you feel like you had it and then lost it?
I think in the 80s, skating was on, we thought it was the biggest thing ever. I mean, yeah. not in terms of we thought skateboarding was biggest. It was just more like we were riding this wave of success that we had no idea was coming. I was in my late teens and making money, like enough money to buy two homes. And it was like, oh, this is it. We made it. This is never going to end. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I found myself with two mortgages, a kid on the way, and my income was all based on royalties and licensing agreements. And skating just kind of fell out of favor. So suddenly my income was dropping by half every month because it was all just royalty. And then suddenly I'm like, what do I do now? I had to pull back on expenses and really just kind of hustle to make ends meet. I mean, that's what I was doing. Luckily, I had a lot of experience, not just from skateboarding, but doing production stuff and even editing video and things that I had learned along the way. So I used all of those skills when things took a dive.
Did you have the fear like skating is going to go away forever?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it was going away. Right in front of our eyes. You
and
know?
You're like, that's all I...
All the skate parks were closed. Like, sales were... The industry in itself. All the magazines were shutting down. It was like... It was slim. There was a sort of spark around 96, 97, where suddenly the X Games were in the fold. Mm-hmm. And kids were looking towards skating again. Oh, and other sports in that realm. But skateboarding especially, where they were like, oh... Look what's become of this. Mm-hmm. These, you know, these skaters are going down these big rails and doing these big spins. And we had only seen skating 10 years prior to that, where it was nothing like this. And also it was just, there was this cool factor. Like when you saw the personalities, the skaters themselves, like how passionate they were, and they were risking their lives for this thing that for no, you know, it wasn't for financial gain. It was just because they love doing it. And I think kids really identify with that. And also the fact that skateboarding is so instant action. You get on a board and it's on. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to do. You're not waiting for the pitch. It's all yours. Go skate the world.
You rode that wave out as as you continue to climb in popularity alongside skateboarding. And, you know, you mentioned that it's already gone so far that it's now in the Olympics. But then also, don't you have Tony Hawk... theme park rides?
Oh, I did.
You did?
I did, yeah.
They're rebranding.
Yeah, no, it was a licensing. It was an agreement with Six Flags for a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
In fact, we were doing our Huck Jam tour at Six Flags for a little while.
Yeah.
At the same time that the ride happened. I did get to help design the ride, so that was really cool.
That's so sick.
But after a couple of years, the contract was over. They rebranded it. I've heard they've actually removed it, so.
Oh, well, you had a theme park ride. Not many people can say that.
Hey, it was a good run.
You had a character in The Simpsons. Did you help design the skateboard emoji, or did I hear a weird rumor? You helped?
I did, yeah.
How does that happen?
I saw that they were coming out with a new batch of emojis.
Yeah.
They do that every, I don't know, 6 months or a year or so, where they add a couple of little things. And someone tagged me, or people started tagging me. Inevitably, if there's something about skateboarding, I just get tagged endlessly, which I'm thankful for, but I see it. Okay, everyone out there. Someone tagged me like, look, a skateboard emoji. And they sort of had this video of just really quick flashes of all the new emojis coming out. And I paused it and I saw the skateboard and I was like, where did they get the skateboard? It was straight out of 1983. It was like... It would have been a skateboard you bought at Toys R Us in the mid-80s.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, how did they miss this mark so badly?
Yeah.
And I just kind of put it out into the world like, hey, emoji people, you know?
Emoji
I don't think this represents skateboarding. And the right guy saw it.
That's crazy. I don't think many people could say they helped design an emoji.
Yeah, and then I sent him a photo of my skateboard. That's really how it happened.
Is that the photo of, or is that based on your skateboard?
Yeah, and so if you look at the skateboard emoji and you compare it to like a modern street skater skateboard, my wheels are way bigger because I skate vert, I skate ramps, so I like to go faster.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sorry to, you know, the hardcore skate crowd out there, but the skateboard emoji has big wheels.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a fingerboard.
Because I ride 60 mils.
And then you skated at the White House?
Yeah, I skated through a hallway at the White House, yes.
When you're not skateboarding through airports, it's through the White House.
Yeah, that one was pretty renegade. I was not approved to do so.
But you did it anyway.
But I found myself in the White House with my skateboard.
You might be the only person that's ever done that.
I'm pretty sure Annie MacDonald was there maybe during the Clinton administration.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure he stood on a skateboard or at least rode it a little ways. So he and I.
Well, you probably went further. You probably wheeled it a little bit further.
Maybe.
And then the craziest cultural phenomenon that you've been a part of, your animated movie, Boom Boom Sabotage.
Crazy.
You know what? Let's just watch a clip from it. I got a clip.
Do you really?
I got a clip right here.
Ooh, smells like poo-poo in here. Gotta be Tony. No, seriously, why does it smell like caca and boobies in here?
Sorry, the audio's a little low. What were they saying in that?
I think it was that I was stuck in a dungeon. There was no toilet, so I think that was the vibe.
how did this come to be?
I can't believe that thing has gotten new life.
When did that come out?
I think it was about 2003, 4, maybe.
Okay.
I had an agent. Like a big time agent that was doing a lot of partnership deals and sponsorship deals and things like that. But mostly he was in the film and television world. And he said, hey, you should do an animated feature, or maybe we should do an animated project with this group that we also represent. So he had a studio that he represented. I was represented by him as an athlete. And he's like, oh, we're gonna combine forces, do a collab. And so I went with this studio and we just pitched an animated skate show to every network. And when I say it, I was like, it was Nickelodeon, it was ABC Family. And we went down the line and got no takers. By the end of all of those meetings and pitch meetings, they said, well, you still have to do a project. What do you mean? He goes, well, contractually, we have to do a project together. That's how the lawyers wrote it.
Even if you couldn't find the network?
Yes. So they said, so we're going to do something straight to DVD.
The best content goes straight to DVD.
Yeah. So it was very much like we were all, I mean, I think they were a little more excited about it than I was, but it was more like we are obligated to do this thing.
You weren't as excited about it as the game?
But they basically brought me a rough edit of the movie where everyone was in wireframe mode. And the voices were they were not consistent. You know, it was just kind of this rough draft. And so I made notes. I recorded my voice, and then I thought we were going to go a couple more rounds of it, and then it went there.
Cool,
I'm accountable. I'm accountable. It happened. There are some funny little Easter eggs, like the guy, the Frank, the skate park manager. He's patterned after my dad.
Yeah,
my dad's name was Frank.
Mm.
Yeah, and then it just kind of. I don't even know how well it sold, to be honest. I think we just kind of did our contract and we were done with it.
Yeah.
When it came back around in the ether, whatever, in the last year or so, there are so many people say, I remember seeing that. I don't even know where I saw it. It was like a fever dream. I almost thought it didn't exist. It
feels like a fever dream.
When Curtis Connor found it, my daughter saw that. And my daughter was the one who was like, Dad, did you do this movie?
And so that's how your kids found out that you did that movie?
He's like, because Curtis Connor reviewed it. And I was like, so you're saying there's a big YouTuber that reviewed Boom Boom Sabotage?
Uh-huh.
And she's like, yeah, and there's this whole thing about you and Wee Whiz, and she played me just that. And I was like, wow, I never imagined in 100 years that when I spoke those lines, or when I approved all that and did it,
that you'd be talking to your daughter about.
14-year-old daughter would use it as ammunition against me.
Right. That was made before she was even a concept.
Yes. Yeah.
How long have you been skateboarding at this point? You're still skating to this day.
Yeah, 46 years.
That's wild. And 2 years ago, you had a very traumatic injury, you were telling me.
Yeah, I broke my femur almost 3 years ago now.
How'd you break your femur?
No, I was skating my ramp, doing a McTwist, which is a trick I've been doing since 1984. I had already been skating earlier that day, and I was kind of tired, and I took a break, and then one of our kids came to the ramp with a bunch of his college friends to kind of, like, hey, look, this is what, you know.
This is my dad.
Yeah, this is my stepdad. And it was like, oh, okay, I'll get back out there and skate. And then I was just feeling kind of stiff, and I went up for McTwist and knew I didn't have the right approach or the right amount of speed, but it was never a problem in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing I know, I'm just sliding across the flat bottom and I could feel my leg literally disconnected.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So, and you had a whole audience too.
Yeah, that was the unfortunate part. But it was immediate that it was like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
Because when you break your femur, like, it feels like your limb is gone, is completely.
Is your femur here?
This bone is your femur, but I broke it pretty high.
Yeah.
My first instinct was to grab it, because it was kind of falling behind me, so I grabbed it and I put it back in place. It's desperate times.
Ooh.
And then I just looked up, I go, I broke my leg. And then I just sat and waited.
So, like, how broken does that mean it was? Like, is that completely?
Completely broken, yeah. In fact, at some point I saw this blood coming from my hip, and I was like, what is that? And they said, that's where your bone was sticking out. But when you moved it, it was no longer sticking out.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a bad day.
First of all, going through your head, were you like, great, I'm never skating again?
Or no.
What were the thoughts?
Stupidly cavalier about it. And I only heard what I wanted to hear from the doctors after that. So I got it fixed the next morning. In fact, the bone like lined up perfectly where the break was.
Wow.
You know, it was almost like super glued back together.
Yeah.
And then I had a titanium rod in there. I had an event that was coming up in a few months, and I'm just like, I'll get back to that. You know, I'll be fine. And so I started skating way too soon. I think the quote I heard from one of the doctors was, well, your leg is never going to be stronger because you have a titanium rod in there. And I was like, sweet, here I go. And so when I
you're like, I have a superhuman leg now?
Yeah, well, I didn't. I fucked around and found out. I started skating way too soon, and that shifted the bone from being aligned to being offset.
Oh.
And so the bone never actually connected back to itself.
Did it heal in that position? Or
it was still disconnected. So did it heal? No, it wasn't healing, and it was what would they call it, a non-union fracture, which means it was not joining.
Okay.
And it was not going to join unless I got it reset again. So that was 8 months into it. And at some point I was just in denial of it. And I just thought, oh, this is how it is. My leg hurts all the time and I can't really put weight on it the way I want to. And I guess this is how my skating is going to go. And then at some point I was like, "This something's wrong. This is always in pain." And I went and got x-rays, and then they showed me that the bone was still just disconnected. And I went to a specialist actually up here in LA that was specialized in non-union fractures. And he got it back together and was very conservative with the approach to my recovery. So it was basically like, you know, you're not going to skate for a couple months. I want you on crutches for way longer than you should be,
mm-hmm.
because I just want you to be slow and careful because you don't get a third chance.
Was there ever a time during this healing process that you did not have as positive?
Sure. I mean, especially within the first few months where, ironically, or coincidentally, my friend who's a couple years older than me broke his leg 3 months after me.
You did
a little bit
it.
Higher.
You did it, didn't you?
What's that?
You pushed. You did a little push.
No, but I was skating with him.
Oh, okay.
And unfortunately, I recognized what happened. And he was the most careful with his recovery. He was in bed and doing all the exercise he's supposed to. He didn't skate for a long time. And then at some point, he just like breezed way past me in his skill levels with his recovery. And I think that's when I realized that oh, this is really, I'm not doing this right. Mm. Like, I something is wrong. Because suddenly, Kevin is way stronger than me. He's got all of his tricks back. I'm still struggling for any kind of speed or even balance. And so that was the first sign where it was like, oh, yeah, you blew it.
What did that feel like, feeling like you blew it?
I felt like a true mortal. You know, where I always expedited timelines with what doctors told me about recoveries for injuries, because I skated and I got active very quickly, and I was willing to endure discomfort and pain just to get back to skating. But this was like I was already so old when it happened. It's the biggest and strongest bone in your body, and I broke it in the worst way, and it was like, how could I possibly expect to defy all the odds on that? But I still was, because I was in denial. And so it was more like, okay, you're gonna have to do what normal people do and listen to the doctor and do all the things. Because I was trying to, like in my first recovery, I was trying to do all the other healing treatments, the hyperbaric chamber, laser, you know. And
you're just trying to expedite it.
Yeah. None of that worked because my bone was not connecting.
I feel like I know, and many people know, what it feels like to have your entire sense of self attached to something that you do, whether it be a career or a hobby. You know, and I'm thinking from my perspective, if I were suddenly thrown or like given this wake up call that I may not be able to ever achieve or be at the level, you know, kind of like past your peak or past your prime mentality, like that could, I feel like that could really mess with you. Did that ever get with you of like, oh, there was like a turning point where it's like.
Oh, for sure. And I think that it was I learned a valuable lesson, and it was very much that I don't have to be at the top of my game or the best skater that I could possibly be at every turn. And I think I attribute a lot of that to my wife, who really drove it home, that was like, you don't have to be who you were in skating. Like, you don't have to go out there and put yourself at risk every single time, you know, just for the sake of what? For another exhibition?
Right.
Just go out there and, you know, I say, just go out there and play the hits and enjoy it and be in the mix. I think that's truly what I enjoy now, is just that I get to be in the mix of the contemporaries and be there skating, but I'm not at that level anymore, and that's fine. Well, I mean, and you know, what do I expect? I'm approaching 60. I am 56 years old.
Right.
I don't know how would I ever expected to do it at that level. I didn't expect to keep skating when I was in my 40s.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that a lot of people run into when they receive legendary status for something. You know, I feel like you're considered a legend of skating. There is this idea that you always need to be reiterating, improving, keeping that momentum, climbing, or else you're falling. And, you know, while I don't speak to many people that do sports, I speak to many people who are creating different kinds of arts or even just, you know, creating videos on YouTube. And there is this feeling like, I can't ever fall back or do less, or else I'm falling off or becoming irrelevant, or, you know, like, where's my worth now if it's not attached to this thing? So yeah, I feel like that's a hard realization to be like, oh, I don't need to be better than I ever was. I don't need to be at the peak of my game at all times for the rest of my life.
My mistake was that I had just lived with those expectations for so long, and it was always internal. You know, I wasn't gleaning my feelings of success from others. It was more like, oh, this is what I set out to do, and I want to do this. And then at some point it was like, why are you risking everything for this new trick? What's the point?
Did you ever have an answer for that? Like, what was the why?
No, then? I mean, I knew, because it provides me a sense of satisfaction and enjoyment, but not enough to, the risk versus reward was just too great now. Having been through that, it set me on a trajectory of being more conscious of my health. Because even though I was in my 50s and I was still skating, I wasn't working out. I wasn't stretching. You know, my diet was okay. And it was suddenly like, no, if you want to keep doing this into your, what would be old age, but middle age, whatever you want to call it, you have to take care of yourself. And so I definitely turned a corner when I got my leg back in the right place and started, I was on a much better routine, stretching, I'm working out three times a week, my diet's on point, you know, and it was like how could I have not learned those lessons earlier? But we didn't have the resources for that. Like, we were skaters. We were the dredge of the earth. Yeah. And also, we prided ourselves on not following those rules. We weren't athletes.
Right.
We weren't, you know what I mean? We weren't on teams. We didn't have the resources.
Yeah.
And who cares? Like, we do this because we love it.
Yeah. I feel like now people would see it as an athletic sport.
Some. I mean, there is, I think that there's a whole gamut now of approaches to skateboarding. And on one end is Olympians.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in training and they're lifting weights and they're doing cardio and they're practicing their kickflips over and over, and that's awesome. And then there's this other group that they just want to get in the streets and skate the forbidden spots and get clips. And everyone has the same appreciation for skateboarding and for what it brings to them. But everyone has different motivations, and that's, I mean, I think that's what's beautiful about it. Because what other sport is there like that?
Yeah.
Like, what other sport can you go to a playground or a designated spot for that sport and you see people of all races, all ages, all genders enjoying the same space and encouraging each other?
And each doing it in their own unique way, too.
Everyone has their own style. It's an art form, it's a lifestyle, and it's a sport if you make it.
I mean, I just think it's so cool how it has always felt like you've seen skating as something, you know, even though it is a solo thing that you do solo, like, it is about that community that you talked about. You know, even creating the game back in the day, you're like, oh, let's bring in these other pro skaters that I know. Let's, you know, include so much of this culture. And, you know, then you're creating skate parks and creating this brand. And it's really about, like, bringing everyone into this thing that you love and giving them a place to show themselves or be themselves, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's our band of misfits for sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's what I always loved about skating. It was just sort of, it was very welcoming. And it was just more like, I don't know, how do you skate however you want to?
Yeah.
There's no rules here.
Skating can be whatever it is that you want it to be.
Yeah, however you want to do it, go for it. And you know, if it's something unique, we're all about it.
It's like the only rule of skateboarding is to have a skateboard. and do something on it.
To enjoy it. I think that's the only rule is to enjoy it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not enjoying it, then you're not doing it right.
Do you think that you will ever say, today's my last day skating? Or do you think it's something?
No, I feel like if I'm able to balance on my own 2 feet, I'll just put a skateboard under it, mm-hmm. under me, under them.
Even if you're not doing vert tricks, you'll just.
Yeah, I mean, there is a sense of freedom, and you know, it's almost like the world stops and all the noise stops when you're in motion like that. I've been doing it so long, and I recognize how much it means to my mental health, mm-hmm. that I don't think I could quit. I mean, I would quit doing it on a professional level, maybe quit doing it in public at all, right. Maybe quit trying to get clips for social media.
Maybe quit doing it in front of your stepchildren and all the college friends.
Maybe stop trying McTwist with no speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that one I can say for certain I'm not doing anymore. But it's just more like there is this sense of motion and freedom that I have never found anywhere else. And if I can have that on the most basic level, then I'm happy.
You know, you said you do it for your mental health, which I think is interesting. Not a lot of people focus on how something like skateboarding can be so beneficial for your mental health. You said it gives you that
sure.
freedom.
And my wife knows when I have not been skating enough.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. She's like, get out there on your wheels. Go. Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned freedom. You mentioned feeling like the rest of the world almost doesn't exist. Almost that, like, artistic flow state of...
Sure. There is that. I think in the sense of, especially if you're on a top level, you get in that mode where it's like, oh, everything, nothing else exists except this right here, and I got it. I've felt that through my life a lot of times where it's like, oh, I got this. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, everything is firing on all cylinders, and I am going to do things that I'd never probably assumed that I would be able to do. Like I said, as I get older and as I just know that this is amazing, I can just ride my skateboard down the street, cruise, you know, like ollie up a curb and go over here, and even just that in itself is enough.
Yeah, I love that. There are certain things in my life that I'm realizing. It's like, if everything in the world fell apart, if my career and everything just collapsed, if I have these things, for me it's painting or yoga or meditation or journaling or whatever. It's like, if I have these things in my life, everything else is just
gravy.
It's just abundance.
Yep.
at that point? You know, if I have these things, do you feel like that with skateboarding? As long as you have skateboarding, everything else is just...
Skateboarding and my family, yeah. That's really it for me. Like, if I'm able to skate, and most of our kids are grown out of the house, living as adults. And so if I'm able to see them regularly and plan doing things with them and be able to skate and make a living, I mean, this is really like... The fact that I get to make a living skateboarding at my age is absurd.
And not just make a living, but help so many other people make a living and change
The other thing is, I would do it for free any day of the week. I would do all the things I do, for the most part, for no income, because it's just so much fun. I do feel like in so many ways I'm living the dream, or at some point creating the dream for myself.
Yeah, you are creating the dream, because there was no dream to imagine. Like, you would never be able to imagine that you'd be here.
Never. Never. And the kind of stuff I could do, like you said, doing The Simpsons and skating through the White House, like, who would have ever expected, like, you know, when we were the scummy skateboarders that no one wanted to pay attention to. I always wanted to do a laser flip. I mean, we're getting into the weeds here. I spent so much time at that place trying to learn 360 heel flips. Like, I know when I am getting close to a trick and at some point something clicks where it's like, oh, I know I can do that.
Yeah.
Maybe not today, but I know I can. I never had that moment
with
a laser flip. And at some point I was like, you guys, I have nothing left. I can't do it. And I go, well, you can come back tomorrow. I was like, no, you don't understand. This is not going to happen. It will never happen. It was dreadful.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of pride to swallow.
I was going to say, was it embarrassing?
Absolutely,
I mean, you are the Tony Hawk.
It was not. It was just more that I had never committed. I mean, I've committed myself to plenty of tricks and followed through with it. But at some point, it was just like, this is just not going to happen.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.